You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later, Hillary Clinton appears to have enough delegates to secure her party's nomination, according to the Associated Press. We'll look at what this means for her, for Bernie Sanders, and the rest of the Democratic Party.
First, in case you hadn't noticed it yet, acquiring stuff is out of fashion. Getting rid of it is in. The tiny house movement, the rise of deep decluttering, and the move to store memories online are all evidence of a new way of thinking about our personal belongings. In a phrase, less is more.
Our next guest used to be a guy who bought stuff. He had a stressful, high-paying job, a tendency to buy things to make him happier. Then his life got turned upside down when his mother died and he went through a divorce. Instead of keeping things, he decided to let them go. Ultimately, he teamed up with his friend Ryan Nicodemus, and together they spread the word about letting things go. There's a new documentary out about them and the movement. It's called Minimalism, a documentary about the important things.
Joshua Fields Milburn joins us now. He's one of the minimalists and the author of the memoir, Everything That Remains. Joshua, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with a clip from your new documentary directed by Matt DiVella. This is a little bit of your story.
Before I discovered minimalism, I think my life looked like pretty much anyone else's. I had a lot of stuff. Hundreds, thousands of books, DVDs and VHSs, closets full of expensive clothes. All of these things that I brought into my life without questioning. But when I started letting go, I started feeling freer and happier and lighter. And now, as a minimalist, every possession serves a purpose or brings me joy.
So I guess it's, in some senses, it can seem counterintuitive that if you have less stuff, you'll be happier. Why does it work out that way, do you think, for you and I guess for a lot of people, Joshua?
I was sort of living the American dream, right? The six-figure salary, the big house with more toilets than people, and I kept acquiring things in the pursuit of happiness, but I realized that that pursuit was actually leading to my discontent, and I realized that if I was going to continue to try to pursue happiness, I chased happiness. The closer I got, the farther away it actually was. The new purchase, that high that you get at the checkout line, it doesn't last far past the checkout line, and so I realized that it wasn't about happiness. The focus should be on living a more meaningful life. And then, of course, the paradox there is happiness is a really beautiful byproduct of that. But living a meaningful life has very little to do with stuff. It doesn't mean that I'm a monk or that I think consumption is inherently bad. I think compulsory consumption is really our problem.
Does it seem like the core of your work, this is something you and your business partner and friend, Ryan Nicodemus, have been at for a while. Does it seem like that idea is taking flight right now, that minimalism is maybe going mainstream?
Yeah, I see a lot more people who are embracing the idea. We just went out on a tour bringing the documentary out to a bunch of different cities, and it's amazing to see who shows up, whether it's a 92-year-old great-grandmother in California, or it is a 13-year-old in Chicago, or a bunch of high school and college kids who show up in Dallas. And what's amazing to me is that while all these people lead considerably different lives, they all tend to share one thing in common, and that's that they're all striving to live a meaningful life with less stuff, but not just getting rid of the stuff. That's not really the point. I think you could go home, rent a dumpster, throw all your stuff in it, and be miserable. The point is to get rid of the excess stuff that happens to be in your way so you can figure out and focus on what's truly important to you.
Why does having stuff get in the way of doing that, of figuring out what's important?
Well, we all have the same 24 hours in the day, and I was so focused on so-called success and achievement, and a lot of that in our culture has to do with the accoutrements, the trinkets we amass in our day-to-day lives to say, look at me, I'm successful, I'm happy, I'm wealthy, I have something to contribute to the world because I have this large business title, or I have this, you know, this luxury car, or this large home, or whatever it may be. And so in many ways, we're sort of peacocking, we're showing off these trinkets in an attempt to get other people to like us, realizing that, you know, we're trying to impress a bunch of people who, in most cases, could care less about the additional stuff.
You said before that happiness was the byproduct of doing this, getting rid of stuff so you could focus on a more meaningful life. Why do you think that is? Why would that make us happier?
Well, when I look at what is a more meaningful life, what is an intentional or deliberate life, I look at five different areas for me. It's health, relationships, passion, growth, and contribution. And whenever I'm feeling discontented, it really means that my short-term actions, my daily actions, aren't in line with my long-term values. And I have to go back and look at those five areas and say, are the things that I'm doing with my time, do they serve these five areas? Because quite often we'll say that we have our priorities in order. We'll say our health is our priority or being creative is a priority. But our true priorities are how we spend our time. So if we're incessantly checking email or watching TV or, you know, going out to the bar to drink with buddies, like, there's nothing inherently wrong with those tasks. But if they get in the way of what our real priorities are, then all of a sudden that discontent starts to creep into our lives.
So, Josh, if we were to walk into your home, your apartment today, what would we see there? What do you have?
You know, my partner and I, we have a three-year-old daughter. I think if you walked into our house, you wouldn't walk in and say, oh, my God, look at this minimalist family. You'd probably walk in and say, wow, they're pretty tidy. And it's because I don't own a lot of stuff. We don't own a lot of stuff, but everything that we do own, whether it's my car or my clothes or my kitchenware, it has a function. As I said in the documentary, every possession serves a purpose or brings me joy. But then, of course, the excess stuff is out of the way. But also, you never get there. It's not like you get down to your 1,000 items and now you're a minimalist and you're going to be happy, because it changes as time goes on. I'm 34 years old now, but 10 years from now, the things that add value to my life today may not add value to then. And so I have to keep asking that question, does this add value to my life? And if not, I have to be willing to let go.
We're talking about being a minimalist right now with Joshua Fields Milburn. He is featured in a new documentary about his work with Ryan Nicodemus. It's called Minimalism. And I want to ask you about that parent part of it, Joshua, because I'm a parent and I'm totally drawn to this idea of minimalism. But my kids are total pack rats. And if we'll go for a walk, and in a single walk, they might find a straw they want to keep and crumpled paper and an empty gum container and a rock. And they don't want to get rid of it at the end of the day. So how do you do that? I mean, are there parts of your life or times in your life when you just can't be a minimalist?
Well, you know what? I it's one of the reasons that I was really drawn to minimalism early on, because the first people I saw who were minimalists were sort of these peripatetic, you know, world travelers, and everything they owned fit into a backpack. And that was interesting to me, and I admired that. But it wasn't the lifestyle I wanted to lead. And that's why when we made this documentary, we went out there and we found a bunch of different minimalist voices. We have a guy in the film, his name is Leo Babalta, and he and his wife Eva, they have six kids, and they live in the city in San Francisco. And then we have another couple, Joshua and Kim Becker, who have a couple kids, and they live in the suburbs. And I think ultimately what I've learned from a bunch of different minimalist parents is that our kids are watching us, and we have to set that example for them. And quite often, if I'm not leading by example first, it doesn't matter what I say to Ella, who's our three-year-old. It really matters what I do and the consistent daily actions that I put out there. And as you just mentioned, quite often kids are fascinated by just about anything. It doesn't have to be the latest, greatest, new, shiny object. Of course, the kids are being advertised to now nonstop. You know, the average person sees 5,000 advertisements a day, and of course, a lot of those are children. But we have to learn how to cut as many of those out of their lives as we can, try to reduce the number of inputs that come in. But we don't want to be draconian about it either. Kids are going to be kids, and they're going to want stuff, and that's okay. And sometimes we have to set up rules or boundaries, but ultimately it's them who's watching us. We need to behave as the appropriate example for our kids.
So give me an example of that. If you wanted to set a good example, what would you do around your kids so that they'd see you and what you're striving to go for there?
Sure. I'll talk to you about one of our readers at one of our events showed up, and they were talking about their kids and how every time they bring home an art project, and I've employed this rule myself now, but every time they bring home an art project from daycare or from school, they, of course, want to put it on the fridge, right? And So the mom would say, yeah, that's great. I don't like saying no to my kids, so I'll always say yes as long as it makes sense to say yes. But then we'll say, what piece do you want to remove? So realizing that saying yes to one thing means I have to say no to something else. But if you frame it in a way that allows them to make that decision, to pick between those things and decide what thing to let go of, it's not forcing them to let go. It's giving them that sense of agency so that they're more willing and more accepting of the things that they are going to let go of.
So, Joshua, if somebody's listening right now and they want to try this minimalism, how do they start, especially if there's someone who's got a lot of stuff? Can you just give us a beginning step or two?
Certainly. Two things. First off, start with a question. How might your life be better with less? And the reason that question is so important is it helps us identify what the benefits of minimalism are for you, because they're different for all of us. Initially, for me, it was just finances and then regaining control of my health and relationships. All these other things came after that. But the benefits might be different for you. And then if you want some practical tips on decluttering, I think decluttering is kind of boring, personally. So Ryan and I found a way to make it a bit more fun. It was something we call the 30-day minimalism game. All the details on that are at theminimalists.com/game, but I'll give you a quick overview. Basically, you partner with someone at the beginning of a month. You each decide to get rid of some things throughout the month. It starts off really easy. On day one, you each get rid of one item. Day two, two items. Day three, three items, so forth and
wow.
So on. Starts easy, so you get that momentum you need, but it gets much more difficult as the month proceeds. Whoever goes longest wins. If you both make it to the end of the month, you've both won because you've each gotten rid of 500 items, and that's a pretty good start.
Joshua, thanks a lot for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
That was Joshua Fields Milburn, one of the minimalists. He's the co-author of the book Everything That Remains, a memoir, and he's featured in a new documentary about his work with Ryan Nicodemus. It's called Minimalism.
Coming up, we'll talk about Democratic politics and what's next for Hillary Clinton now that she appears, by one calculation, to have enough delegates to win her party's nomination. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.